Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. To the crazy train. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages. Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up. It is time to wake up. There is no more sleeping in bed. I wish I had the full lyrics in front of me so that I can read them to you. What a timely classic by Harold Melvin in the Blue Notes. And almost everybody knows, if you're my age, that Teddy Pendergrass was the lead singer. Later on, launching off into a very awesome solo career, bringing us some crazy, crazy hits. Lovely, lovely hits that were, you know what? I'm not even going to go there. There's an old Eddie Murphy joke where he said, I think it was Eddie Murphy. This was like years ago, back in my 20s when I heard this. And he was talking about people scaring you into, scaring the pants off. He said, Teddy Pendergrass kind of did that with his song lyrics. He was talking about other, let's say, baby making music from that time period. Here we go. Turn off the lights and light a candle. Tonight, I'm gonna... Let's just stop right there. You see what I'm saying? It's like, turn off the lights. And then it is, what was the other one? Let's take a shower. That's not where I was going. That's the same song. Oh my gosh, what's the other one? It was turn off the light. Oh yeah, close the door, baby. It's like the man is yelling at you. Anyway, it was hilarious back then. I was in my 20s. Anyway, welcome back to the white. Oh, she's not here, so this is just me. Welcome back to the crazy train. Basically, this is where I come on by myself and I cover, you know, politics, some popular stuff that's happening in the news. And something that just may be on my mind. Here, clicking, ringing, ringing. That's my bracelets on my arm. So, yeah, that's usually where I come and I do these things, separate from my daughter. I am your host. I am T. Anthony Bland, also known as Whitebeard. Well, it has been a very long time since Mike has been alive, and there is a good reason for that. And hey, here's a little tip for you. This is the second time recording this episode. You will never know that because you will never hear the first time that we did this about 3 days ago. My daughter and I were sitting here and we were going over this because we wanted to, you know, talk about and review the film Uncle Tom 2, which we are going to talk about today, which I'm going to talk about today. The notes are all scattered. I don't usually talk with notes. I usually have an idea what I want to say, and I'll repeat it over and over in my head, the points that I may have. It's just like when I was in school, and before I had to give a speech, most times I would write out the outline, then jot down the key words that would always point me to what it was I was thinking. So at home, I would run through my speech, whether it's a 30-minute, 3-minute speech, or an hour speech, whatever it may have been, I'd run through it already. So that way I could stand up there and freely speak without looking down and glancing at my notes or stopping to read from my notes. So the issue we had doing the podcast the other day was that I kept looking at my notes, and it was the second time we viewed the film. Well, I did the second time. She wasn't out there. She says she's just going to remember something that I said. And so I was writing down notes. And I was never like my wife. I am not a great note taker. I'm more of an audio learner. So when I take notes, I was sitting here with the paper, and they're still, I'm still looking at them right now. They're scattered all over little bits of pieces of paper, one whole page, things are going backwards, forward, crossways, and everything else. So that's basically how I take notes. And so when you want to turn on the mic and we're sitting here talking to one another, it was dark that particular day. This is the late afternoon when I'm recording this. I couldn't really see the pages, and so I was stumbling over everything I wanted to say, and it wasn't free flowing for me and annoyed me. So I told her, I'm going to record it over again. I think I'll just do it myself. You go work on some other things. So let me explain briefly what we talked about in the opening update. The reason why the mic has been dark is because we wanted to focus on the YouTube Adventure Channel. This is our second year. Wanted to get a little bit better at it. We had just gotten a GoPro, and we're still struggling. We're trying to figure out the best settings for the GoPro as we're hiking and traveling and creating these videos. We wanted to get better at it because we're already doing the podcast for almost 3 years now. We started this in 2020, so yeah, so we've been doing this one for a while, and it has changed shape since the beginning. It was just, talking about hiking and the outdoors, which is primarily what we still like to focus on. And it was started on a Tuesday, so I always wanted to make sure whenever we were gone for a bit or whenever we came back to make sure we drop a podcast on the day that we actually started was on a Tuesday. But 2020 quickly took a crazy turn during the summer. So we found ourselves talking about racial things as stuff was happening in the world and the politics. And then I started to do like a Sunday show. And the Sunday show was really hard on me. I come from a background of working in politics for like 4 years before all this stuff happened. And so for me, it's interesting and I can talk about it, but it was very draining for me. And to sit and talk for 45 minutes and an hour, most times I would lose my voice, and it started to turn into a rant. So I did that once a month. And then as things started changing throughout the year, we started changing up the format slightly, went from once a week to twice a week. And then I think last year we went a couple of days of the week and we were doing something we both love to do, which is movie and TV reviews. And we're trying to work on a few other things because it is more of a variety podcast where we're just like everything else in my life, I am not just a one-trick pony where I only focus on and only do one thing. There are a lot of different things I'm interested in. And so what we did find with doing that year was that whenever we talked about something that had to do with black or something like that, the numbers went up with people listening. And that's kind of shameful, but I understood as I get into that a little bit later of why that happened and why it continues to happen. And I've been saying this now for over 2 years for us to really be careful and wake up to the tricks and the trappings that's going on, because what's going on is something that divides us as human beings, and in our country, America, that divides us as Americans, that we do not look at each other as fellow Americans. And it's designed that particular way by the things that are going on. So basically, the tail end of ending the podcast, if this is your first time here, we always wanted to end with a positive note, obviously. Well, not obviously. Which was the idea of, you know what, we don't have to agree on things, but let's please know and agree that you and I are of the same race, the human race, that we are a human being. We live, we breathe, we hurt, we're each other's neighbors. And I know many people out there are not Christians, they're not focused, or they don't care about Jesus, but I want you to just hear a very, very simple word. Was love one another. And this is kind of how I always wanted to end it. But the year changed, and as the second year rolled around, we started changing things a little bit, the little format. And so then one summer we binged The Walking Dead, and so we started doing, Dead Monday or Walking Dead Monday, but I have to actually go back and look at our podcast. And we started doing that until The Walking Dead took its hiatus. And so we didn't really do much more of that. And then as this year progressed, as I said, we took a break to look at what we were doing on YouTube channel because it became a little too hard. I am a writer. And so in between things I wanted to write, in between editing video and we both sharing that whole thing and sharing recording the video, and then doing the podcast, it became a lot. Plus a lot of different things that we're doing in our lives and our personal life. And so that break was very good for that reason. Secondly, if you follow us on Instagram or something like that, not something like that, on Instagram, you will notice that I also took a break in October, in August, from all news, all social media, and we took a break from hiking because August on the East Coast of New York and New Jersey is pretty darn hot, and you gotta walk over rocks. It can get to be pretty annoying. So we took a break and then restarted in September. So I'm not gonna say that the White Bear TK podcast is officially back. We may just cut this year short as we continue to focus on other things and things in our personal life, and just may show back up in January, or maybe a few shows in between now and December. But after watching Uncle Tom Part 2 or Uncle Tom 2, I was like, I can't wait. This information, I need to share my thoughts on this. It's a little different than when you're writing it. Actually sitting down and having a conversation and talking about it. But there are three points today that I have on my mind that I want to talk about. And I hope that I can bring it together for you in a package to show you how things are happening. So that's an update on what was happening, how it happened, and why I'm here today. And yeah, so there you go. While we took a break from hiking, it was a whole month. And so I go a little stir crazy when I'm not out in the wild. We've been doing this now for five, almost 6 years, traveling, hiking, camping, and all that other stuff. And the last time we went, oh my gosh, the last time we went camping, let me stop back. During a hiking hiatus, we decided to go do camping. We weren't able to camp this year outside of backpacking in April. And so we hadn't traveled either. And I was itching to get outside. The road was calling me, we need to go. And so we shot up to Niagara Falls, is the last place we went. And so we did a couple of road trips during August. And one of the last ones in Niagara, a 4-day camping trip. Shortly before we left, I noticed Uncle Tom Part 2 was coming out. And I was like, ooh, I wanna see this. But the day that it was going to air, I knew we were gonna be out. And so I said, you know what? When it was going to premiere, I said, we're going to be at camp. And I was like, oh, shoot, I can't get a streaming thing. So I said, forget it. So I ordered it. And it was supposed to be shipped out on September 1st. Now, I said, I didn't want to wait that long. But I purchased a video. We hit the road. We're second day at the campsite. And I get an email from FedEx that the movie was in the mail, and I mean that the movie was shipped out and it was gonna be mailed. I'm like, oh my gosh, we're not even home. And you know, I don't wanna sit out in the hallway and some neighbor come and take it or it goes somewhere else. I'm gonna be really mad. So long story short, that didn't happen. It actually arrived the day after we got back from the camping trip, which was also one day before September 1st and before I was about to jump on social media. So we watched the movie together and I said, I want to do a review. I need to talk about this. I can't. And I was like, am I going to write about it? I don't know if I want to do a blog. It would be kind of hard to put my thoughts together. Let's do this as a podcast. And 1 week went by, And 2 weeks went by, and we never got to it because when we came back, we had to unwind from camping. We had to unwind from the road. We had to put the camping equipment back, which, by the way, is not back in its place. And we had to then start preparing for something that's happening in our lives that we need to get into motion. So it was a lot of moving parts. But so let me get into this. I don't know what the title is going to be. I'm thinking, Camping While Black or something else like that. I don't know. And Uncle Tom. But I guess when you click on this, you will know what the title is. If you've seen Uncle Tom, the first movie, it was more of a, hey, here's a different perspective of conservatives, black conservatives in America. Here's a different take on it because most of what you hear in the news and in the media and on television is that, conservatives are all white, they're all old white bigoted men. Of course, they use the word racist interchangeably, like it's two different meanings, like it isn't two different meanings. And that black people who are conservatives are coons. Black people who are Republicans are sellouts and Uncle Toms, which is the reason why this movie is named the way it is. And they're Uncle Toms, and they're this, and they're that, and they don't know what they're talking about. They're blind. And before this movie came out, I heard a lot of those names being hurled at me. And I was, and Steph, especially during the Obama administration, and if you've been listening to the podcast a lot, you hear me have said this very early on, that these attacks were coming at me when I was on Facebook and a few other things. And here's the twist, and this also goes into the rest of the show today. Here's the rub. The whole thing was that Obama is black. Why you hating on a black man? He's so and so. He like us, and he this, and he that. And I was going, his skin is brown. He's also a mix of African and white. He grew up in a socialist family, or was it communist upbringing? It was his stepfather, something like that. I think it was more socialist. So he grew up with that stuff. He had that stuff in his mind. He was hanging out with, I believe it was him, maybe when he got into Chicago, some guy from the what was it, the Weather Underground, and a lot of those people, those white liberal and radical people. But we're so programmed to see everything, especially, and this is very, 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 very unique to Black Americans. Africans don't really have that issue. Here in this country, we have this issue. And that's why African immigrants can come here and look at us and go, what the heck is wrong with you people? We're so conditioned, so trained to look for everything and be emotional about everything that's the same color as you, that we never really sit. I'm talking generally as a whole of a people group in America. For those of you who want to say, not everybody, well, clearly I'm not everybody. But I'm talking about generally speaking. So, trained to think in skin color and think that that's my brother, we all together, we this and we that and so and so. That so many never think to use their brain to go, hold on, wait a minute, what's happening? Now, if you're of the same mindset in thinking of Barack Obama and the socialist left and those type of people, then surely yes, that's your person, that's who you agree with, that's your president, that's your man. Throw up that black fist, give him a pound, high five, all that. But being a thinking person, coming at the world with a Christian worldview. Also, I've been a pretty much a conservative my entire life, even before I started voting as an adult. And then being a Christian conservative, and then when I started voting, my first party I voted in was a conservative party. And then I learned, wait a minute, they ain't got enough money. And it's two-party system. The two biggest political parties are Republican and Democrat. So it kind of switched. I switched the political affiliation, political parties, when George Bush Jr. was running, and I moved to Republican. Side note, let me clear this up. I probably will say it again throughout the show. All Republicans are conservative. Not all conservatives are Republican. Let me explain why I'm telling you this. Because every time somebody says that, you know how those Republicans are. You know how those Republicans are. Ouch. Republicans are a political party. Conservatives are people who have conservative values, who have a conservative ideology, who believe in certain things as conservative. Excuse me. And my daughter and I was watching Peaky Blinders. I'll get back to that maybe a little bit later on. And if you look at Peaky Blinders, you can pick out the more conservative and the conservative political parties in that movie. If you look at world politics, which most Americans don't, you can pick out the conservative parties, which you will not hear them say in another country, whether in the UK, Australia, or someone else, is that they are Democrat or Republican. You got that? They're not Democrat or Republican. They are conservatives or liberals. When it comes to governing, that's where you land for most people, and that's where you are in your life for most people. Now, when it comes to economics, that's when you start getting a little sticky, when you get into communism versus capitalism versus socialism and fascists. I think you could throw fascists up there with political, you know, structuring as well as economics. And so that's all vastly different. But in this country, we live in a box, and that box is everything that comes through our box by the media, TV, movie, whoever the media thing it is you're watching this from, as Republican and Democrat. That's wrong. Those are political parties. People who join these parties join them because they fall in line with some of their core beliefs as liberal, progressive, socialist, communist, or as conservative, super conservative, whatever you want to call them. So let's get that straight, so that when you're listening to the rest of this and when you're listening to people talk, you can remove the blinders off your eyes and unplug your ears to understand what's exactly happening. Because the very same thing is happening around the entire world, pretty much at the same time. So, Uncle Tom movie, the first one, the Uncle Tom movie, was basically saying, hey, here's another view, here's another viewpoint. Because the other media, the left side, the leftist media, the progressive media, whatever you want to call these people, there's a whole bunch of names of them. For the sake of the rest of this show, I'm just going to say left and right or leftist or something like that. Got it? So, for the majority of the media that we all watch, including movies, it's all a left perspective, a left viewpoint, a left thinking that they want you to see in the information they want to give to you. So it is a rare occasion that you will see a more conservative viewpoint ever show up. And when you do, Everyone from the other side will do their darndest to stomp it out, to call them names, to say these different things, and to go bananas to call you a racist or so-and-so. And when they find that you are a black conservative, forget being part of a political party, you are a black white bigot or some other crazy things that they are seriously whacked out of their mind to call you. So before that movie came out, I felt like I was all alone. And I'm battling people on Facebook who say, Obama this, Obama that. I'm like, no. He's not anything like me. His skin complexion is like me. And when you think about it, do white Americans look at every white, every Caucasian politician and go, hey, that's my brother, that's my sister. They believe everything I believe. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. So why is it so unique to black Americans, so many, that this is a trapping for them? So my battle at those days was like, no, he doesn't have my same value systems or anything else. Just because he has the same complexion doesn't mean he's the same. And as time proved, I was correct, and he showed his colors with a certain thing. Now, if you are left-leaning and that is the stuff that you believe in, then absolutely you're going to think him and AOC are the cat's meow and the dog's bark. But I urge you to open your eyes and your ears and listen to the other side. It's going to be really hard because most of everything is controlled by the left. So Uncle Tom One was like, let's show you something new. Check this out. There are other groups of conservatives, and they are black conservatives, and this is what they think. And they showed different sides of them, the people who were black conservatives and did these other things, and it was like, wow, a breath of fresh air. And it was beautiful. Uncle Tom 2 is more like, all right, we got you in the door. Let's cross the street, peel open the curtains of that other building that people have had shut with the windows so you can't see, and we're going to peel that back and show you a lot more. We're going to show you what's happening underneath, behind everything else that got you to the point of why you were so angry and talking about this, and why you would be so dogmatic, whatever the word may be, of hating black conservatives or just whatever. I don't even have words for that right now. The documentary opens up, and I like the use of black and white. I really was saying, man, I would like to have some color, but I said nope. The use of black and white is awesome, because all you can do then is focus on what's in front of you. It is a very well put together documentary that lines up certain things, and I say there were two parallel stories running. One is the decline of faith within the black community, and I will say, as I have said on this podcast for years now, the decline of the Christian Judeo faith in this country, period. The recent things that have happened with churches over this year, with all the young pastors and everything else that's going on, it's kind of proof positive stuff I was saying beforehand. And when people were bending their knee in 2020 and kissing some black people's feet because, and this was in churches, I'm going, y'all done lost your mind. And so there's a decline of faith in a community that brought about a decline of a lot of other things. A sense of awareness of yourself and your worth and a lot of other things, right? And so the second line would be the political, I wrote this down somewhere, the precision strike at America by communists and socialists, and how they were doing it and how they had to infiltrate, because it was always about infiltration. So there are two parallel lines. And as it comes towards to the end, for me, there are it's very complex, and there are a lot of other things happening within this film, but I pulled these two out for myself as the main theme for me. And it comes to a head, or comes together like a funnel for me, that we get back to that political position strike. And that was the key to dismantling everything else. The film opens with, I call, a thesis statement. Everything you want to know about what's going to happen and what you're going to see is said right in the beginning. And I say that's a thesis statement. And then, like, what if you've ever had to write a report in school, an essay, something else, you get your 3 points. You start out with your thesis, you have your points, and you end with your thesis statement. So I said that's a thesis statement. And everything else, the body of that documentary, was to back up, give evidence, and prove why that statement was being said. So it starts out, I want to say it's like 10 minutes before you see the title screen. And in this 10 minutes, you will hear, I think his name is Chad Jackson, right? Chad O. Jackson. I don't have those names down in front of me. Chad O. Jackson is talking. And he says, what he wants to do is, I've written this down somewhere over here, is break the spell. Break the spell that has held so many people captivated and caught that they're not paying attention. He says a few other things. Following right after that, you see a reporter on a bridge, and she's pointing to a bridge, and she's saying that 401 years ago, somebody need to prove that to me, because I know slavery ended long before 400 years ago, and how you still counting, whatever. But anyway, 400 years ago, slavery was so-and-so, and this bridge is where, and forgot where it was, in 1619. I went, bing! That's where they get the 1619 project from. In 1619, where the first slaves were brought to America, and blah, 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 blah. And she says a few other things, and she says about the trauma of slavery. It has gone on through generations, the pain, the anguish, the so-and-so, the blah, blah, blah. And they cut to another scene. I believe it's the same exact reporter. She's black, by the way. But I guess that should make sense to you, right? But it doesn't. But you might not get it. And so she's talking, and she's talking to another psychologist. I don't usually talk black and white, but for the sake of what we're doing right now. So she's talking to a black psychologist. And they're talking on this TV show, and so she's interviewing a lady, and she's going, and they're looking at this little girl. Some little girl about 7, maybe 8. I doubt she was 8 years old. I seriously doubt she was 8 or 9. I think she's about 7 years old. She's marching with a bunch of adults around her, and she's screaming, and they've got the video camera right on her face, and the mask is hanging off her face and under her chin, surrounded by a bunch of people, by the way, during the time it was a pandemic, right? And she's screaming, no justice, no peace. A little angry little face. And she, no justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. It's been over 40-something years. Can these people finally get a new line to scream out? But anyway. So she says to the psychologist, she says, you could see in her face the emotion, the passion behind her eyes, and blah, 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 blah. And the psychologist says this. That little girl learned that from history. That little girl learned that from her parents. I don't remember what else transpired in between that, but then you see the title screen. I looked at my daughter, who's 19, sitting next to me, and I said, that is the key. This little girl learned this from history. This little girl learned it from her parents. Well, at 7 years old, I turned to her and said, at 7 years old, how much history could she have learned? How much information could she have gotten about slavery? How much information could she possibly get about the difference in the pay scale between a woman and a man, or whatever else is the newest thing on the block? How much, at 7 years old, how much could she possibly know about what are they pumping into her age group right now? That there's like, you know, a billion genders in, you know, pansexual, fried sexual, bat sexual, whatever it is, at 7 years old. She don't know spit at 7 years old. The key to that statement was the second thing that that psychologist said. She learned this from her parents. The question now is, where did her parents learn this from? Because the other opening statement that the lady said is that this stuff is passed down from generation. You doggone right it is. Because you regurgitate the same thing, you tell us to your children, you teach it to your children, they grow up, they teach it to some to their kids, and they keep going, and keep it going over and 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 over. But that girl did not learn that from history. She ain't even learning history yet. And that is the trick in the trappings that the left continues to use. And people fall for it. I don't know why. I can't tell you why. Later on, there's this thing that, there's this other quote. Where is it? Our enemies are our children, grandchildren. Our enemies are our children and our grandchildren because they believed that deceptive lie. I forgot who in the film said that. That's another key statement. What the film does lay out is that there was a concerted effort. Like, you know, black life in America was surrounded and you know, was built with a foundation in Christ, whether from slavery on, right? I'm going to jump all the way around here. And at some point, lost faith in that. Got away from that. At some point, as you will know, in the quote unquote black churches, there's a lot of social stuff happening in black churches. You know, from Malcolm, not Malcolm X, what was that guy's name? Oh my God. Oh, every Black History Month they talk. Martin Luther King Jr. Newsflash, I believe he was a socialist, but you know what? Don't quote me on that. Why don't you do a little trip down history and figure out for yourself? I will tell you this. Half of what I saw in that film, I already knew. Because I did my own research back a few years ago because I had questions about certain things or why certain things didn't happen, especially when I was in college. Why we learned about this person and not that person. I will get to them if I remember who those two people are. And there are a few clips where you hear Marxism, right? Where Karl Marx, I think it was Karl Marx, did he dedicate his book to Satan? Whoever it was, doesn't matter. Karl Marx's idea was to destroy God and to bring down the government. I could be getting this all completely wrong, but that is the point. And so here was this whole manifesto that he had. Now you go from that and you trace that down to socialism and all these different groups of people who all had the same thing. And in the film, it mentions this other guy. I didn't write this stuff down. Go and see the film. I'm telling you, go purchase it, whatever. Look at the film. I think Uncle Tom 1 is Uncle Tom, the movie, is still free somewhere. But to go purchase it and listen, watch it. There's this other guy. There was another guy who said that, you know, they need to destroy, the idea was to destroy America, right? But he was saying, you can't go in there with guns. Because the way our system is set up and the way we are as a people, you can't come in here with guns. I think it's maybe early 1900s. You can't do that. So he said, we have to infiltrate them. We have to go in and infiltrate the schools. We have to go in and infiltrate government. We have to go in and we have to do this and do that. But the point was to infiltrate and bring it down from the inside. And they begin their concerted effort in doing this. The communists, the socialists, and the Marxists. Put them all together, you know who designed this whole thing. But anyway, so they go out and set out to do that. And little by little. So some of these people from the training, like John Dewey, I believe he was in New York, got into the school system. You see where I'm going with this, right? Got into the school system. A few other people got into the health area. And then as we all know now how college is, you can't get a serious education anymore. We already know what high school is. You know, before my daughter, after my wife died, before my daughter was homeschooled again, she wanted to be homeschooled and I tried to keep her in school. And then we brought her back. I was looking at a school next to where I work at. And I'm like, well, where's your library? Where's these different things? And we walked in and they had all of this protest posters downstairs. And I'm looking at it and I'm going, oh my God, it's one of those schools. I'm like, what happened to the days of when you sent your kid to school to learn reading, writing, arithmetic, reading, writing, math, and how to construct a sentence and all these other things? And you left the politics and all those things to the parents. Now, because schools were designed at one point to prepare you for the work world, not to be rich, not to save money, not to learn how to do those things, but to create a workforce. Now, this seems like they want to create a activist force, at least in this country. And so the scope and the scale of school has changed. And they're coming out learning certain things that they never ever heard at home and were taught at home. My wife and I raised six kids until she died. By the time she died, most of them were all about to be 20 or already in their 20s. The last one that was left was my daughter, and she was 13. And had two more that was just above her, but they were just about to move into their, you know, 18 and 20 something. And I can tell you for a fact, we raised them as a foundation of Christ. We were always pretty conservative about money and trying to save and try to teach them about money and try to teach them about money markets and do these different things and how to better your life and you know, take the baton and move it further. You know, my parents' generation was totally different. My mom and dad was all about get that city job, because in the 60s and the 50s, that was a great thing. Get that city job and do those things. They couldn't get giant insurance. They couldn't get a lot of banks to take their money. That's why, you know, a lot of black people in America was hiding stuff in their mattresses and inside their home, and like drug dealers do now. But so we try to push that further. We push education as a key to unlocking a lot of things. We taught them how to walk and talk and speak. There was no slang allowed in our home. Because the point was, we didn't want you practicing that much. We didn't want you practicing that and saying that every day, that you would not be able to have a conversation with anyone within the world. We wanted them to be able to go through doors and open doors. That was the foundation for them. And I can tell you, leading up to 2020, about half of them were talking that black fist, blow this, and everything else. That's crazy, right? My parents' generation was about breaking segregation, opening up doors. Now their grandparents, now their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren, their grandchildren's generation is all about segregation. So the question then goes, when you have to look at that, as that statement said, our enemies are our children and our grandchildren because they believe that deceptive lie. How is it we raised our kids this way, but you shoot those arrows out into the world and they're believing everything and they're falling prey to all these different things instead of sticking to the foundation that they had and keeping their eyes and seeing the world through that? And so the infiltration worked. It worked. It worked within the media. It worked within the movie industry. It worked within the healthcare industry. It worked with so many things. Think about this. You've got people breathing and screaming hatred over how abortion rights are taken. You ain't got no right to your abortion taken, but I'm still sorry though. Why are you breathing out hatred and so on? I just watched someone on TV just a few minutes ago arguing with a lady who was pro-life, right? And so she was saying the trauma that happens to women after abortion. So the other lady was saying, well, you know, so she said, who are the worst? Now, who are the worst people? Who are the people who are affected by abortion most? Whatever it is about the life. I think something about the baby's life. And so the lady screams, poor people. I'm like, what? What? So your answer is poor people need abortion because they can't afford to have kids. Newsflash, don't have any when you're too poor to have some. And if you happen to have them, then you learn to raise them. It will be hard, but you figure it out. You raise them to be honorable human beings because people have always done that. Now, that may be hard for some of you to hear, but what you're not hearing is what I'm saying. Listen to what this woman said. Abortion, poor people. Like, that's the only option. Eradicate the baby because poor people need it. Do you understand where I'm going with this? Do you understand the thinking? And the thinking came from how all these other things were laid out so that this stuff can infiltrate and tear us down from the inside out. I'm going to get off the abortion thing. So you see the rise of this Marxist thing, right? And so As it goes on, there was another point where they were talking about Black Wall Street, because you'll see this a lot. And there's a PBS special coming up with that guy who did all the Trace Your Ancestry people, and he's always with all the celebrities and, you know, the celebrity people, and not like people like you and I who can't afford to go get through all that. But Louis Gates, I think his name is Louis Gates Jr. And it's funny because they come out within a month or two after Uncle Tom 2 comes out. And I'm going to get back to that because it speaks volumes. So you see this track of socialism working into this country. Then you can see the destruction as God is slowly being removed and the people are slowly believing in something else. And they remove the power of God and put the power of man. And then you got this other thing and you're leading this stuff. And it just gets really, really crazy. And I heard about Black Wall Street as an undergrad. I was a 42-year-old undergrad. I had started school in my 20s and then had to leave. My son was born and I was homeless. And so it was like 20 years, literally a whole 20 years before I got back to school. And I heard about it as undergrad. And they were talking about Black Wall Street was destroyed and a whole bunch of other stuff. I'm not going to get into more news clips. But when you're looking at this, they got footage from a pastor who was down around that time and showed that whole area was rebuilt back nearly better in 1925. That's not the story anybody's being told. They're being told that Black folks can't do anything. They got to put their hand out to the white man to get this. We need to fight against that. We need to protest again. That's not the story you're hearing. Another thing, I'm going to get to my daughter, and I'm going to try to wrap this up because I'm going a little bit longer than I wanted to, and I can't get to the other two things I wanted to say to you. So that was very unique how they laid that out and how, I'm going to get to that a little bit later. And so one of the other things that really, 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 really ticked my daughter off was this, what's your comments? I believe it was a socialist. And was learning who was behind BLM. Black Lives Matter, not the Bureau of Land Management, which is something totally different with us out in the outdoor world where you get to go camp free and do a lot of other stuff. It was a white guy who was a Marxist. You may or may not remember, when those three ladies were interviewed, one said that so-and-so and I are trained Marxists and organizers, right? The same one is the same one who got put up in the news because she brought that mansion or whatever it is, that expensive house, and then, you know, it was talking about breaking down the walls of immigration and everything else, but then all of a sudden, when all that stuff hit the fan, she built up a big old wall to keep her separated. But, right, remember that one, because she's going to come back. Well, you come to find out, which I had an inkling behind this. The person behind it was a white Marxist. And you hear from his own words what he used, which was he liked to go into Black and Latino areas and use women or use these other people and to train them to go out, infiltrate, whatever, and do these things. You heard what I said. And so we're looking at the young girl. She was young, and my daughter was pissed off. And then the other thing she was mad, it's like, they always talk about these Black people, talking about white people this, and then you turn around and find out that they're sitting over here serving the white folks that's sitting over here trying to destroy the Black people. It's like, how does this make any sense? I said, don't ask me. She's the stupid one. Guess what? He said he met her when she was young. She said in an interview on camera, when she was like 17 years old, that she met him when she was 17 and she was just angry. She didn't know what to do and she didn't know what to do with the anger. And then she met him and so on. And I said, oh, sweet Jesus, dude groomed her. And my daughter said, what other kind of relationship did they have? That girl would later become one of the founders and the leaders of BLM, which was set up and started by a white Marxist. These are the same people who's always telling everybody else, rally and march against the white man, against the old white man, against the so-and-so, so-and-so, so-and-so. But look who started you, look how you begin, and look what you're all about. Marxism. So that made her angry. And that was a nice little tidbit, because I always wondered, I had an inkling idea, but then you put that together and then you have the evidence of the people who were all involved speaking of their own words and sitting there going, how did America sleep on that one? So that was crazy for her. There was a small interview, there was a clip, it was probably of a bigger interview of Clarence Thomas talking to somebody else, who said that when, you know, he was in college, he went to the Harvard Square and he had protests and went out there. He said one night he did that, he was so angry, went out there yelling and blah, 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 then comes back home, woke up the next morning and couldn't even remember what it was he was doing that for or why he did it. And I told my daughter, I was kind of stupid and blind in my 20s too for like a half a second. And it's insane. But if you're a thinking person, a reasoning person, you are probably quick to jump away from that and get out of that. There are other people who fall prey to it, because the people who are leading and speaking to them are very charismatic. I was trained by a lot of these people. I didn't realize it until I became an adult and in college. What was going on? When I was in my young, in my 20s, mid-20s, I was working for this place called Youth Action Program. It was run by I didn't know what a liberal or a leftist or a conservative was when I was that age. I learned that later on as a full-grown adult. A white liberal woman who had a relationship with a Black man in the 60s, but from wherever they were, she said they couldn't be together. And so she wanted to live her life by herself. I don't even remember she remarried again. And so she had this organization. And in this organization, there was this thing at this point in the 80s where it was a Children of War tour. I was part of it for about 5 seconds. You know, she saw me, saw the way I spoke. and said that I was articulate and I was smart, and thank you, but I had some jacked up front teeth. And so she's going to go and get my tooth fixed and put this other stuff over there so I can go on tour and speak with these other kids who, you know, talking about the war in the ghetto, right? With poor and black people and everything else. But on the Children of War tour, I was sitting down with and speaking to and hearing the stories of these young kids. One guy had a burnt hand from challenging in Africa, I think it was South Africa, a tank. He was throwing back the tear gas and burning his hand. They were throwing rocks. A girl from I forgot what country in South America was. And so I was speaking with people who were some actual battlegrounds. And it was amazing that they lived through that. Now they were coming to America to speak about the ills of the world. And so she wanted me to go out and do that stuff. So part of this program was I worked on a construction site 1 week and went to school the second week or the other week. So one of my school weeks was a GED program. One of my school weeks, I learned about, I was taught by one liberal Jew, I want to say radical leftist black woman, who told me I'm like Stokely Carmichael. I'm like, you know, Stokely Carmichael. You're going to be another Stokely Carmichael. There's a yearbook. And inside the yearbook under my picture, there's a quote that I say where I said, someday I want to be like my hero or my idol, Malcolm X, I think. I don't know if it was hero or idol. That tells you where my brain was at that particular time hanging with these people. And so the Jewish guy taught me about the Chinese building the railroad and everything else. And so I was being groomed in liberalism and all this other stuff and the lesser stuff. I get to college and I'm learning almost the same thing. Now, my college was originally a Catholic all-girls school. In the 60s or 70s, they opened up another adult program that took both male and females. And they opened up campuses, one in Harlem and others in the Bronx and stuff like that, which I originally, as an undergrad, went to one of those. And then for my grad school, I went up to the main campus, the girls' school, for grad school when I was in communications. And in there, we heard history from the viewpoint of the guy who just recently died, a few years ago. And a lot of other books. And when it was, I went to the Harlem campus. So on the Harlem campus, there were pictures of black people, you know, supposedly in history, black quote unquote leaders. And there was Malcolm X, there was Martin Luther King always. And when Obama was running that year, did he win that year? And so they had his picture up there, the dream. It was like, I have a dream. Then it said, the dream realized. And they had all these different people, Rosa Parks, you know, the usual people, Rosa Parks, who sat on the bus and all these other things and this and that and the other. Well, someone mentioned Booker T. Washington to me. I didn't look into it then. It wasn't until years later I looked into Booker T. Washington. Now I heard about, and now here we go about grooming, right? I heard about E.B. Du Bois, and someone said, well, you know, you're one of the talented 10th, you're here to do so. So I had to read The Souls of Black Folks. I don't think I got past the first chapter. So I had to read The Souls of Black Folks and how the Black Renaissance happened and all these things that was happening around that time period and all that W.E.B. Du Bois said. And that's when someone put me on to Booker T. Washington. And I wrote a paper, and in my paper, it was them in the future as old men. And Booker T talking to, what's his name? I just said, E.B. Du Bois. And it was like, oh no, I went to interview him. The point was from the viewpoint of the interviewer. So I went to interview, the person went to interview him and said, now that you're older and you've seen what's happened between now and then, would you have changed anything about what you had to say when so-and-so said this thing? And so that was how my paper went. I didn't really know about Booker T. Washington. What I knew about him was a thing called the Atlanta Compromise. And hold on a second. I'm running. In school, they talked about the Atlanta Compromise and something about him being sort of a sellout because he was saying, you know, go work for the white man and do all this other stuff. Why Booker T. Washington was saying all these other things. I learned later on that he started a school. But you know who wasn't on those walls? Booker T. Washington was not on those walls. You had an Oprah Winfrey on the wall, but you didn't have Condoleezza Rice on the wall. It wouldn't happen until years later I figured it out. The reason being is because they were they had two different viewpoints. One's left, one's right. One's conservative, one's liberal. One's leftist, progressive, socialist. The other one isn't. So everybody up on that wall was all the people from the left believing black people. Anybody from the right, any conservative, was never up there. That's when I started to do my own little research as to what? Why is this happening? Why is this happening? It's like one time I was in church and someone, you know, the pastor kept talking about brother, whoever it was who was in Pentecostal church, Brother Seymour. And I would hear about other, you know, church fathers who were all white and Puritans and all that other good stuff, right? I had a question. So after all these years, where are all the black folks? You're going to tell me there were no Africans, no African Americans at that point, we're now calling ourselves, that did anything? I never got an answer. So one day I just took it upon myself to look at Brother Seymour because I happened to be in school and was reading about the beginning of the AME church and how it began was they were part of another church where they were allowed to go and read the Bible, right? Learn the Bible, read the Bible, study the Bible. They had to get back to their plantation, all the good stuff. But they had to sit in the back. And so the guys challenged, wait, why are we sitting in the back if Christ says that we're all one? And so they left and begin the African Episcopal, the African Methodist Episcopal Church, right? Because it was the Methodist church they were in. And so I was like, huh, I don't know why. What made me go and look up Brother Seymour? But I looked up Brother Seymour. This was a black man. Part of the Pentecostal movement of churches out in California who had one of those, they call the outpouring. I'm not going to get into that in this show today. And the outpouring of the Holy Spirit, we've had some here in New York State, upstate New York, down on Wall Street, which giant prayer meeting that started a whole big other thing. And you saw people repent and change their lives and just a lot of other stuff. Repent from a whole life of sin, right? So Brother Seymour is out there on the West Coast. And in his church, black, white, and every other nationality you could possibly think of was at this church, and that pastor was black. Now I'm sitting there going, why didn't the pastor ever tell us this? Granted, there weren't that many of us brown folks who look like me in the church. But while you're teaching other things, and while you're speaking Spanish at some point, and while you do, you know what? You could have let that out the bag. It would really have been nice to know, be like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. Not that I need to have a representation, but you understand where I'm going with this, right? And so you find that in this country, lots of points of history are hidden. And then there's that game that people like to play. Back to the look for him was because of all the stuff that I noticed in school. Here are these people, but you won't talk about the conservatives. And if you are watching movies, TV, the news, any sort of media, jump on social media, you will find the same thing. And if you mention one conservative person, they will say blah, 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 blah. They will say this person's a racist without even knowing. I have never in all my life ever, ever heard of Thomas Sowell until about 2 years, 3 years ago. I had this thing called Hub Pages. And it was like a little website. I had to build a website. I had to put my own ads in there and everything else. And one day during the Obama administration, I made it his second term, I was getting attacked a lot. So I started looking at this, my black conservatives of this and that and the other. I looked up, I just Googled, I put in the Google search, black conservatives, and I got a line of a few people. There weren't that many that were well known. And I started listening to some of the things, watching some of the channels. Candace Owens came up a few years later than that, and I saw her on TV, on YouTube, and now she is who she is now. But I started finding some of these people. I'm like, oh my gosh. And I found out that there was a lot of people, but no one knew this. Because the information is perfect, purposely hidden to keep one agenda alive. So when you're looking through this social media, you get this, you get the attack of this person's a coon, which has happened to me, and I'm a sellout and everything else. I'm like, but how is that possible? You're not even listening to me because you listen to that. So everyone only has, you really only get one viewpoint because there's only one group of people who controls most of everything that you see. So that's why films and documentaries like this are very important. I lost my train of thought of where I was going. That's why it's good to write notes sometimes. So my search for this led to that. Open my eyes to these other things, and then voila, there you go. So that ticked off my daughter, finding out that behind that was a Marxist, and behind the Marxist was this other stuff. I heard about this film because I had just read Vodi Bakum's book, is he a pastor now? No, he's not a pastor. He works at a school in Africa. He's a Christian. I heard Vodi Bakum like early 2000s, late 99. There was this big Christian movement for like a Quiet of Fire or something like that, you know, reaching teens. I saw this big football player guy come up here and talk. He was young then, no hair in his face and no beard, and none of it was white. I was like, who is this guy? I loved the way he spoke. I later on found out that he wrote books and stuff. And so I picked up some of his books. So now, I don't want to say he's a Christian thinker, but you know, one of those. He's also conservative, who also grew up with a mother who was a Buddhist and had a different type of political leaning. And he grew up in South Central LA. Went to college, became a Christian before, after, became a Christian in college. Then moved to Texas, met his wife, and a whole bunch of other stuff. It's a very beautiful, long story. He wrote a book, and it was talking about the Titanic shift. Oh, what is the name of the book? Fault Lines. In the book Fault Lines, it's like just watching the church fall apart over social justice. And says how what creeped in to the church is that Marxist and socialist belief, and you've got this other stuff, and it's just, you know, it's flipping the church on its head. So when I heard this movie was coming out, I heard that Vodi Bakum was gonna be, I was like, really? All right, well, this ought to be interesting. Well, a lot of the stuff he was saying in his book, and they were interviewing him in there, and he was speaking about a lot of a few different topics, they covered in this film. So I'm like, okay, so I'm not the only one who knows this. He's not the only one to know this. Chad O'Jackson knows this, and they did a whole bunch of field work to come up with all this stuff to package this in this film. Unfortunately, there is a car horn going off in the background, but whatever, you may or may not be able to hear that. Unfortunately, a lot of people will talk against this and you won't ever see it. And the honking made me lose sight of what I was going to say. So I just saw something. And so part of that whole thing was, like, you're going to see this, but you're not going to see this. And you're not going to see this because there are a bunch of socialists and Marxists, people behind all these things, like NAACP. All these different organizations, if you trace it all the way back, to how they begin and who's behind it, they're not black people. They're a bunch of white liberals, Marxists, who are controlling these things. And they're using, which is another point in this film, they're using black people and they're using up their emotions. They're using black people for that purpose. It's a shame that so many are not going to be able to hear that. When I heard about the Renaissance in Harlem, what I didn't hear was that one of the people, a couple of guys who was under, what's his name in the South? Booker T. Washington's tutelage. Booker T. Washington's idea was that, you know what? We're not going to win them protests and saying, hey, give me this and give me that. Why don't you just work? Work well, work hard, learn something, learn a trade, learn a skill, become useful. People will come to you and they will do this and they will do that. You will get paid. Get your strength there and you can do some other stuff. Get that economic power. So my black power was being now set up north in Harlem, right? But get that economic power and do this. For this, he's called a sellout. Well, one of the people who was under that thinking moved to Harlem. He took one of his skills, right? One of the first things he did, he started buying up a building. He brought up some land. He started a real estate company, something like that. He brought up some land, he brought up some building, and then lickety-split, snap your fingers, there was a couple of other black people turning into real estate companies and buying buildings. So he brought all these buildings. More folks move up from the South and they bring their skills, they bring all this other stuff, and Harlem is booming. Now in school, I was told that this was the, as the guy say in the film, the W.E.B. Du Bois faction, and then you have the Booker T. Washington faction. I was told it was the, what is it called? They call E.B. Du Bois a black ex-intellectual. Right? So he's one of the black leading intellectuals, and he's over here, and it was him and his faction that did this. It was the other faction that did this, but you won't hear this. You also won't hear that he was also kind of paranoid. You also won't hear that E.B. Du Bois wasn't poor. He grew up in a well-to-do family. You also won't hear that he was an atheist. And these are the people who so many lifted up as black leaders in the black community, not knowing they were going to destroy themselves later on down the line. It's too long for me to get into you the state of black communities now, as opposed to at a certain point in time. That's a whole different podcast, but they kind of cover it very well in this film. And you could find this thing out if you go and research for yourself. And just look for it. Look for when the shift and the change happen. I had to do that with the church going, how the heck we get all these denominations from Jesus? How do we go from the teaching of Jesus to the church over here? Well, there was a massive schism in like 1100 and something. I forgot the exact date. I was just telling my daughter about it the other day. And that schism split the church when it hit Europe. There was an Eastern Orthodox, which was Oriental Orthodox, and then you had the West. The West became Catholic, Roman Catholic. And then they split during the protest of Protestant. And in between that, the Church of England said, nah, we ain't gonna have nothing to do with you. And then whoever, I forgot who it was, the next king or the queen came in and then said, no, we're Roman Catholic. And then the other one came and said, no, we're not. And they moved back the Church of England to be closely Orthodox. So kind of like, you know, Catholics without the Pope. We don't really hear much about the Eastern, which would all happen over there and down south into Ethiopia. And there's a whole lot of church history. You hear mostly about what happened with the Catholics and the split there. And then we got the Protestant. Now the Protestant after the Protestant movement, we've got a billion other denominations. We get to America and bam, there you've got a crazy about denominations, and it's just insane. And nobody takes the time to search and research to find out something of how one thing began a certain way and how it ends up being how it is now. So it was really fascinating to find out these two schools of thought at that time, what was happening in Black communities around that time. So that was another fascinating point about the guy buying all the different things. And let me jump out of this and then move into something else. So that's crazy. Camping While Black and the Queen's Death. See how fast I can get this out. We were in Niagara Falls. Now, Hannah and I, TK and I, have been hiking. We're the only ones in my family who are into outdoors and all the other good stuff. And the last time we went camping, I'll get to that in a second. So we're the last ones. I mean, we're the only ones. I started hiking. I didn't know anybody who was hiking. Nobody who was Black. Nobody in this ghetto of the Bronx or anything else in South Bronx. So it was just us and we started this. And every once in a while, we'll see somebody Black on a trail where we're hiking at, because usually we're all over the place and we're out certain times. And we'll see one and be like, hey, how you doing? The last time we saw one lady was before we took our break. She had this massive dog. And you say hi. And then you remember, like, wow, there ain't a whole lot of people out here like us doing this. Other than that, I don't look for it. I don't care to, because I'm out here because I love doing what I do. So we're out camping, and it was late at night. We got late that Friday night. A truck came in, this massive truck, making a lot of noise. And then I heard some banging and banging and banging. I'm like, man, y'all need to stop this. But it wasn't that late. And we had this guy who was playing the blues behind us, some young kid who lived up in there. And he was just playing the blues, and we loved it. The night he left, my daughter said, I couldn't even sleep. He wasn't there to play. So that was great. One of the days I was thinking, you know what? I've been watching people. What I want to do is, I want to learn how to cook on an open fire in a cast iron pot. So beginning of this year, I brought a cast iron pot, but never ever used it. So we took it. We got it seasoned, and I said, I'm going to cook. I don't know how to do this. I don't know. I just remember watching some shows on TV or watching people do this. So I cooked up the coals. I got the thing there. I took, you know, I made pepper steak with rice, made the rice at home. And my daughter said, mix it, which I didn't like it. I would have liked just poured a pepper steak over. And I did it. And I was like, yes, I'm a man. I actually screamed this. And it was pretty cool. The guy was playing blues behind us. We were eating this food. And I'm just watching this pot and this fire as I'm cooking this. No one taught me this. No one I know is doing what I'm, no one who looks like me I know is out here doing this. Right? So that was that night. The night before, I didn't realize, but that particular morning, I heard some loud talking. I'm like, who is talking up the storm? And I hear some more banging, clink, clink, clink. And I turn around because I smell the bacon. And I was like, Hannah, Black people. And so, and I look over, I was like, man, that bacon sure smelled good. But he had one of those swivel grills I've always wanted to do, help you cook an open fire. Because I knew it was going to be a fire ring. I didn't know if it was going to be a grill top, and there wasn't a grill top. So I had to learn how to cook an open fire. And she was supposed to cook chicken the next day on the grill. And I was debating about buying a grill top to drop into that, or do it another way. So she ended up not cooking that day. But I always wanted to get one of those. You kind of anchor them into the ground over the fire pit, and you can swivel your stuff over and then cook that over that way. And so I saw him. We later on had a conversation. This is why I get into Camping While Black. Because all throughout the years of us camping and hiking, you'll see a lot of posts of black hikers this, and you see the black fists and camping while black. And if you ever watch YouTube, you can't even find camping stories on YouTube unless you're watching us, the Whitebeard and TK Experience. The Whitebeard and TK Experience. A stupid mic. I pressed the button to shut it off. Well, you get to see all of that, how we do things. But you always heard, you know, camping while black, hiking while black, and all the stories, always these bad stories, some horrible person, some bigot had this to say to them, and, oh, this is why we don't do it. And if you ever see a camping video of black people on YouTube, it's like, this is why black people don't go camping. This is black people camping. The reason why we don't go, because there's some person will come out, some white people going, you know, we're scared of lynching. It's always some negative BS. And people like us, we don't even have a huge following. We don't even have 100 people. Because people don't look to find us. Most channels on Camping Net, we watch a couple of families, but all of them are Caucasian. Unfortunately. So I'm talking to this guy, right? He's younger than me. He's from Chicago. And he loves the outdoors, so does his wife. And we just had a long conversation about hiking. They just went skydiving and all this other stuff. And I'm sitting there amazed going, wait, what? First of all, it's like another black person. And then it was like, whoa, they're doing even crazier stuff than we're doing. And he said, skydive. He said, you know what? My whole thing, he said, I'm the only one in my family. You know, we're the only one in our family, but we're trying to break that. You know, we're trying to break the mold of how people think about doing things and do things. And that's why we do this. You know, we want to change not just the image of that, but we want to change how we do things. Him and his wife want to change how we do things. Don't want to always do the same thing that people expect you to always be doing. You know, play basketball. We had this type of conversation. You know, play basketball, do something else when there's so much of a huge world out there. And so they love the outdoors. We had a great conversation about being in the outdoors. And then we hit the elephant in the room about being black in the outdoors. He said, you know what? I meet people and they're just great. I said, so that's all I had too. We've been treated lovely. And we both said the same thing. We never go into the mindset of, I don't belong. This person's looking at me cross-eyed. That person has something to say. Or this person could do something like that. Because when you go in with that viewpoint, you're going to find what you're looking for. But what you do find is not people like us in the media or television or even talking about this stuff. When you do, it's always this negative image that people purposely want to put out there. Queen Elizabeth II just died. And I was watching a bit of a funeral today along with some other stuff. But I hear tell that the knuckleheads over in The View had some negative thing to say about the British Empire, and she served the British Empire, or they read a so-called tweet, a hateful tweet that they didn't know who it was who said this, yet you read it anyway, about, you know, they're glad that she's dead and blah, 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 blah. And I don't even know what this lady's name is. It really doesn't matter to me. It really doesn't. But she said, but it's true, right? You know, what they did to Africa, to black people, and so-and-so, and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, pump the freaking brakes. Here we go again. The leftist media always do this. Hateful, evil, stepping on a grave because you hate everything. And why do you hate it? I've already explained it at the beginning of the show, didn't I? I already told you about the infiltration, didn't I? Let me show you another example of this. So she went on with this. Let me tell you something. I'm not a giant fan of Biden. And when he finally kicks the bucket, I will not be sitting there, man, he was this and he was that. I will respect that the man is dead. And that's it. If I have something negative to say about him, it will be the same thing I've been talking about him this entire time. There's no big whoop. But here you go. You had her entire life. You've been on TV for a long time. You had her entire life. You had all these years to talk about negative about the British Empire. You had all these years to talk about all these atrocities, yada, 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 yada. And you never once opened your mouth. And then he had the black woman say it. You never once opened your mouth until she's dead. However, they sure do love kissing the butt of her grandchildren, don't they? The young one who's married to Diana's son, who's married to the failed actress Meghan Markle, whatever the heck her name is. Right? Isn't that the royal family? But you love them, right? Why? Well, what kind of craziness have they been saying recently? We're only going to have two children to help the... I did a whole podcast on it. We're only going to have two children to help with the environment. Oh, well, you go ahead and do that. Your simple-mindedness probably shouldn't procreate anyway, but, you know, who am I to say? I can make that comment, and I just did. And I was like, what? You're hating on this, and he come from the same family, but you're loving on them. It's left versus right, conservative versus liberal. And that's all you're going to hear is the negative stuff. You're not going to hear the other stuff. Case in point, let me ask you this. Dear listener, did you know that Elizabeth took the throne when she was 25? Did you know that her son is now going to be the king, and he's taken at 73, which is one of what I just heard recently. He is the oldest monarch to take the throne at 70-something. He's still younger than Biden, by the way. To take the throne in the 900-some-odd years at 73. Anyway, so his mom, Elizabeth II, was not supposed to be the queen. Her uncle was supposed to be king. This fool abdicated the throne. So here is this young lady who's got a young family, living her life, has to go, okay, and she assumes the role of queen until she just recently died. She came on right after it was World War II. Right. She assumed the throne shortly after World War II. But you're not going to hear that. You're not going to hear how tough it was for her to have to go through that as a young person and the dignity, this young woman. But we're going to talk about young women, and we're going to talk about all the movie stars who's out here championing the cause of, I killed my baby. Look at her. She sees her freedom and so-and-so. Anybody? They say all of that. But here's this young 25-year-old who takes this throne at a difficult time and brings the monarchy through a difficult time when they were switching the way the monarchy was now going to be running. You talk about her like a dog, but you don't talk about the things that she did. When you talk about black women in this country who've done something great, it's Oprah Winfrey, but it's never, ever Condoleezza Rice. And there are a number of them, but I just keep bringing up her because it's amazing. And so my point, because I need to close this out, is to bring this all the way back to the beginning. Whether you're out camping in the outdoors and you hear these things, whether you hear the stuff about this, about the queen, the negative aspect and how this person is saying this other stuff and just start off saying, you know what, someone died. Let's let them go out in peace. Let the family mourn them. Let them have their funeral and just be done with it. But the left media is always very, very ugly and angry in their attack on other people. The film about black conservatives, the film about the infiltration of the Marxists and all those other things, the plan that was from the beginning of the infiltration to bring down this country from the inside out is in full swing. It's in full swing. It took them a long time to get here. But that's the reason why you won't hear things about this film. That's the reason why you won't hear that there are a lot of black people in the outdoors. That's why you won't hear about there are a lot of wealthy and millionaire black folks in this country. That's why you won't hear anything about African immigrants coming in here and how they're doing it very well and how they have a different mindset than Black Americans. And Black Americans have been used for a very long time to be tripped up and stuck in a black in a particular mindset. So they can never move forward and move on and move past and go up. And I think this film shows very well about how these things happen. And it doesn't just happen to people who look like me. They're just using the backs of people who look like me to get their message and their attacks out. But it affects all of us. It affects all of us. I sat here a few months ago. I went down to Tennessee a few times. And I took my car to be fixed. And at the dealership, the guy who was working with my car was saying, oh, I would never go down there. They're lynching people down there. And I looked at him with a serious face like, are you kidding me? You know, I have a friend down there who said, they would never go down there, you know, because they, you know how those white people are. And at one point, I just got tired of it. And I said, no, I don't. My daughter and I never had a problem. Never had a problem. And if I did have a problem, I wouldn't run to social media. I wouldn't be texting somewhere else. I would take care of that issue if it was a bigotry issue. It was right then and there talking to the people. That's how I would handle it. Because I have a different set of backbones. I have one, and it's strong. So this is what we see. This is what controls the media. This is what's going on. This is why you have Camping While Black and all the other stuff. You need to check out this film. I added those other two things in there because I thought that it fit very well with what's going on, but I went very long today going over that stuff. But the point was, the setup is something that began many, many years ago. And the offspring is where we are now. As that quote goes, the enemy, our enemies are our children and grandchildren because they believe that deceptive lie. Everything that's going on. And the whole point of getting into the school system and getting to the younger generation, younger and younger and younger and younger, you see what's going on in this country, is because you're planting a seed like you do with anything else. And as they grow up in that atmosphere, what they grow up with that mindset, now they're going to go out into the world and they're going to begin to grow and it's going to take root and they're going to start doing the different things. Look at everything that has happened in the past few years. Donald Trump ran for office. They said he did this. They blamed him for racism. They blamed, like, no. Those knuckleheads and crazies had already existed. And people don't need an excuse, but they see an opportunity and they jump on it. And when 2020 came, people saw an opportunity and they used a bunch of people to get out there, to get a message, to continue the hatred and the anger, to continually hack at the bottom of the tree of America, to destroy it. And then the enemy becomes your own children because they believe and they eat stuff without using their brains to think. And that's scary, man. You know, you and I don't have to believe ideologically. We don't have to be on the same page. We don't. But we can have a conversation. I knew immediately when I was talking to that guy at the campsite, because he said, you know, I went up to Chicago or I went somewhere. He said, I went up there because, you know, I wanted to go see Bernie, man. And I wanted to see, I was like, Bernie. I was like, okay. And I didn't say anything else about that. But our common ground was, we're out here enjoying the outdoors. So we had conversation and we talked about a lot of things. Don't let the media blind you from looking at the person standing next to you and knowing that that person is your countryman and you're both in the same country. Don't let these people keep dividing you and dividing us and make us destroy this country. That is it for me. My voice is totally wrecked. I hope that you've gotten through this whole entire show today. I hope that you learned something. I hope that you go check out this film. I hope that you see and understand what I'm saying. And you go and you look at the world and you research it and you think and you look for yourself to see if I'm right or wrong. And if I'm right, that's scary. And if I'm right, you have the opportunity right now to make things different. See ya.